Welcome to Comic Book Today for Monday, June 11th, 2018. And this is the episode of the week that we like to call the Top of the Pile. Before we get to the Top of the Pile, though, I wanted to give a couple of announcements. I posted this on Twitter the other day, and I just wanted to make it formal on the podcast. I'm going to be introducing a couple of new segments to the podcast just to move things along, make things a little different. Over the last few weeks, I've kind of gotten to the same rhythm, doing the same types of episodes. And one thing that I promised myself when I decided to do this podcast is that I would do various different things that I normally don't get a chance to do on my other shows. So the first thing I want to talk about is a new segment that I'll premiere on Friday, and it's going to be called Top 5, and it's not going to be a weekly thing. It'll be, I don't know yet, maybe every 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. And basically, I'll pick Top 5 of something, and this week, I'm not going to announce the topic yet, but it'll be related to a bit of news that I'll discuss on tomorrow's episode when I actually discuss the news. So look for that this Friday. The very first Top 5. The second thing is, and I haven't decided on a name for this segment yet, maybe like Origins or something like that, I don't know yet, but back in the day I used to do this podcast called Comically, and I really enjoyed doing it, but the thing about doing Comically is that it was extremely time intensive. I did a whole lot of research on a particular character or a particular bit of comic history, and I talked about it for like, you know, 30, 45 minutes. And I want to bring that back, and I don't want to do it as a separate podcast because I'm already doing this, and I'm doing so many different things with this. I thought it might be cool to bring that back. So that'll probably be coming back next week, probably also in a, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 week schedule. I haven't decided that yet either. But the first couple of ones will be reruns of the original Comically episodes, just so I can give myself a little heads up on the research. But I'm looking forward to doing those as well. So if you have a name for that segment, let me know on Twitter at Geekvine. And next Monday, I'll have one more announcement, but we're not doing that yet. Let's go ahead and get to the Top of the Pile. And these are some of the books that I read on this past new comic book day. I read a ton of books. I think I read like 18 or 19 comics this week. Really, really good comics weeks for me. Thoroughly enjoyed pretty much everything that I read except one book. And I'm not going to say what that book was because I'm sure that there was people that enjoyed it very much. But if you go on my Twitter account, you will see which book I did not enjoy. And that was tagged with the hashtag comics I read today, which was started, I think, by my good buddy Rob Krieger over at the Geek Brunch Retrocast. So I'm sure you can find it. I posted it on Saturday, and just not my cup of tea. Everything else that I read, though, thoroughly enjoyed. I'm going to kick off with doing some DC books that I read. On this episode of Top of the Pile, there's going to be 3 DC books, 2 Marvel, 1 Lion Forge, and 1 Dark Horse. Is it Dark Horse? I hope so. It is Dark Horse. So let's kick off talking a little bit about Man of Steel number 2. This is, of course, Brian Michael Bendis writing. The art is by Doc Shaner, Steve Rude, and Jay Fabak. And, you know, I didn't talk a whole lot about the first issue of Man of Steel number 1 because I didn't quite dig it. Like, there were some cool things that I thought were in there, but overall it didn't really impress me. I gotta say that changed quite a bit with the second issue of the series. I think Brian Michael Bendis may be keying in on something that really does make Superman interesting, and it's something that like Jurgens and Tomasi and everybody were playing with during the rebirth phase of DC of the last year or so. But, you know, we're bringing back a lot of things. Like, the fact that the Daily Planet is such a big part of Superman again, I think it makes it really interesting. And it brings something back that we hadn't seen in a while. And I'm really digging it. In particular because, you know, this is a new take on newspapers, I guess. You know, I mean, how many newspapers are around nowadays? Not very many. You know, not as many people read newspapers as they used to. And of course, Brian Michael Bendis used to work for a newspaper, so he's very familiar with this side of the business. And I really dug the way that he's showing how torn, I guess, Perry White is, because the newspaper apparently got bought out by somebody. We don't know who, but somebody bought the paper. Of course, circulation's not what it used to be because of the competition. And they don't explicitly go into the, you know, like online news versus print news, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought it was a really interesting thing to bring into this because, of course, the Daily Planet was a big part of Superman stories for many, many decades. And I like that that's being brought back. I think Perry White is a fantastic character, and we're seeing some new sides of him in this take that I really enjoy. Of course, the, can we say resurrection? Introduction, I guess, is probably a better term. The introduction of the Toy Man to the DC Universe proper is quite interesting. I really enjoy the battle of Superman versus the giant mech that's being piloted by the Toy Man. I thought that was fantastic. And, of course, there's a joke in there about Toy Man versus the Toy Man. And I thought that was pretty funny because recently, a friend of the show, Jay, who does the Best of the Rest podcast, had posted a question on Twitter about, is it Joker or the Joker? And, of course, the correct answer is the Joker. And it kind of brought me back to that, you know, because some of these characters, after a while, you just kind of get used to hearing them being said one way. And, you know, that's not quite what their name is. And apparently the Toy Man is dealing with this identity thing in this issue, which I thought was fantastic. Of course, we do get to see Lois in here. That was nice. Also John. And there may be some stuff going on with Lois and Clark's relationship that we're not made aware of yet. And I look forward to seeing what the change is whenever that's brought about. Of course, this is just the beginning of the story, and I don't want everything immediately. But there's definitely something, some kind of fracture in the relationship. And I want to know what that is. You know, Superman here is very personable. He's very emotional. And I like that because for such a powerful character, it's nice to see him have a little bit of a weakness. You know, the human side. I think that's important for a being as powerful as Superman to just not be super all the time. Even though in that first issue we did see exactly how powerful he is. But, you know, he was raised by a human family, and so of course he does have a very human side. And I'm sure that'll play in somehow to the rest of the story with, oh god, what's the guy's name? Rogol Kar or something like that. I can't remember the bad guy's name. The guy that supposedly destroyed Krypton. I'm sure that he'll end up seeing that this guy's just not the typical or stereotypical a-hole Kryptonite, or Kryptonian, excuse me. And I look forward to seeing how that goes. So, really, really enjoyed this issue. The stuff with, like, the Elders of the Universe going on in here was pretty awesome as well. I want more of that. I want more of that. There was some interesting interplay with how the Elders actually approve, or didn't approve, of the destruction of Krypton. But maybe one of the Elders had a hand in it. And I'm not going to spoil that little bit of the story, but I thought it was really, really well done. So overall, I'm really enjoying Man of Steel, finally. Finally, it's only two issues in. But yeah, this second issue was definitely much, much stronger than the first. Moving on to The Unexpected, this is a New Age of Heroes title. It's written by Steve Orlando with art by Ryan Sook and Kerry Nord. And if I'm not mistaken, Kerry Nord did most of the story, and it was fantastic. I love both of these artists. But the pages where Kerry Nord takes over really, really stood out for me. And this is a Firebrand-centric story, and I've always been a big fan of Firebrand. I know Firebrand's been in a couple. I think Firebrand had a solo title in like the mid-90s that I really enjoyed, but I don't even know if anybody bought. And I think this whole like Hawkman side of the DC Universe is kind of often left by the wayside. You know, some writers have really interesting ideas, and while those stories play out, they're really great. But for the most part, I think it flounders a little bit. And, you know, I look forward to seeing what Robert Venditti does this week when Hawkman number one comes out. But I enjoyed this Firebrand story. And the villain here is Bad Samaritan, who is freaking awesome. He's like a, I don't know, like a mystical macho man Randy Savage, and I thought it was fantastic. Every time I saw him on the page, I wanted to be like, step into a Slim Jim, and I just loved it. He was a great villain, obviously very powerful, and we do get to see, well, I'm not going to spoil the end, but there's an interesting Hawkman tying at the end, and I want to see where that goes. The really cool thing about this book is that it is action-packed, like really action-packed from beginning to end. And there is a lot to read, which is often not the case with books that are heavily packed with action. So I enjoyed that Steve Orlando is able to mix those two things in. That's something he did kind of when he was doing Midnighter too, right? I think for me, Orlando's kind of hit or miss sometimes. I'm really digging that Crude series he's doing over Image. And, of course, I love Midnighter. Some of the other stuff he's done, I've been kind of iffy on. But I'm glad to see him bring this out. And this story is really fantastic. There's some, like, Grant Morrison-ness in here. And I know that might turn some people off. But I thought it was really well done. If you've been reading some of the other New Age of Hero books, you may find this book similar to, like, Immortal Man, for example. And I think that's okay. I think this is actually a much stronger book, at least for this first issue. So we'll see how it ends up going. But really, really digging what's going on with The Unexpected. And I look forward to seeing the next one. I'm not going to talk about Curse of Brimstone, but I highly recommend anyone listening go read Curse of Brimstone. I don't hear anybody talking about it, but I'm pretty sure that it may be my favorite New Age of Heroes titles right now. It used to be Terrifics, and there's been some creative team changes there, and I don't think it's as strong as it was. I do still enjoy all of them. Silencer's fantastic as well. That might be a tough call between that and Curse of Brimstone, but really, really awesome book as well, so check that out. Let's go to Justice League at number one. Man, I was dreading reading this book. Scott Snyder is writing. The art is by Jim Chung, and I really dreaded it. I know I've talked about this before. Metal was just okay. No Justice was just okay. And, you know, a comment I made on Twitter about this book was I kind of wish they hadn't even done the DC Metal thing or the No Justice thing and just ended the previous Justice League book and brought in this new creative team, this new direction. Because Justice League number one is, I thought, fantastic. I thought it was really, really strong. This is the kind of story that I want from a Justice League book. And I think a large chunk of that goes to the fact that Martian Manhunter is back in here. And he played a key role in the story. Once they introduced him into the story, it just changed completely. And it was incredible. I would love to see another Martian Manhunter book come out. I know there was one in, was that New 52? Yeah, New 52. It was like, I don't even know, 8, 10, 12 issues, not very long. And it was extremely weird and maybe not what I would have wanted from a Martian Manhunter book. But for me, it worked really well. I loved the hell out of that book. But I'm glad to see him back with the League, being the chairman of the League. I think that's his rightful place. He's a very strong character, very smart, very calculating, and very fair also. And of course, it's important for the Justice League because they are about justice. And that is another message that is drilled into the reader throughout this first issue that, you know, this team is about balance and making sure the world is a good place. And of course, we have the Justice League battling Vandal Savage, and then that whole thing kind of goes by the wayside when Lex Luthor comes in, and I'm not going to spoil the rest of it, but I really, really enjoyed it. There's a little bit of humor in here as well with the whole different Justice League members imitating Batman's voice. I thought that was pretty funny. In particular, the way that Flash does it, which of course makes sense because Flash is oftentimes a very comedic character. And I really dug it. Really, really dug it. The introduction of Jon Stewart in here was fantastic. I really love that. I think I'm still partial to Hal, but I know Hal's going to be going on a different journey, so I'm okay with Jon being here. I know Jon's got a big fan base, and I do love him as well. So for me, I got to tell you, my favorite Lantern is Kyle. Kyle has always been my favorite, but been really digging the Hal Jordan stuff. And of course, I look forward to seeing Jon Stewart kind of take over the role of the main Lantern in this book. But Justice League number one, really strong start. I hope that this team can keep up the pace on that. I know there's a new artist picking up on the next issue, and that's okay. Jim Chung will be back in issue 7. But really, really strong. Really strong. If you've been dreading reading this, just like I was, then put that fear by the wayside. This is a really fantastic, nice return to form for the Justice League. And really, really makes the Justice League mean something again, you know, by making such a central part of the DC universe. So thoroughly enjoyed it. That's a definite 5 out of 5 for me. From there, let's go on over to Marvel, and I want to talk about The Immortal Hulk number 1, written by Al Ewing, with art by Joe Bennett, inks by Rye Jose, colors by Paul Mounts, and letters by Corey Pettit. And of course, Bruce Banner has been gone for quite a while, so this is his return to the Marvel Universe. Although we saw him previously. If you've been reading other books, you've seen Hulk come back. But this is the first time he's come back to his solo book. And while I really enjoyed the previous Hulk title that had the She-Hulk as the main character, I think this first issue worked really well. It's not what I'm used to reading from a Hulk comic, and I really like that. This is, in some ways, a horror story. In some ways, it's kind of like a... How would you say it's a definite like crime thriller? As we learn in here, there's a robbery at a gas station. A couple people get killed. One of them turns out to be Bruce Banner, and of course he's not dead because he's now the Immortal Hulk. And the way that the Hulk is presented here is very different. He's very much aware that he is the Hulk. He's very much aware that he's a separate entity from Bruce Banner, and so you've got this weird Dr. Jekyll Mr. Hyde thing. And I really dug it. It works really, really well. I don't know what book I want to compare it to. For some reason, it gave me like some Swamp Thing vibes in a way, like Alan Moore Swamp Thing. I don't know. I'm not quite sure what I can compare it to from the big two. But it was really quite enjoyable. Really quite enjoyable. I know that in Thor Ragnarok, which I finally recently watched, the Hulk Bruce Banner thing was changed a little bit, and Hulk was kind of taking over the whole persona, the whole body, and that's kind of where we're going here. And I really dig it. It works really well here. Whenever we see the Hulk, he's like this, I don't know, like really evil looking being that Bruce sees in the mirror, and he's like a spirit of vengeance, and I thought it worked very well. So thoroughly enjoyed Immortal Hulk number one. For Marvel Comics, I'm going to give this one a 4 out of 5. I can't wait to read the next one. I have not been excited for a Hulk comic in a very long time. I've been reading the Hulk books and really enjoying them, but this has me like really interested to see where we're going next. So I think that's a big, big plus for Marvel and for making the Hulk kind of an important character in that universe again. From there, let's go to Doctor Strange number one, written by Mark Waid, with art by Jesus Saiz and letters by Corey Pettit. And Doctor Strange, or as I like to call this book, Doctor Strange-O-Manowar, because for those of you that know that I'm a big Valiant fan, this book reminded me a lot of the current direction of X-O-Manowar. And the reason is that magic has kind of escaped Doctor Strange again, right? Magic's dead. And he needs to find a way to renew his magic so he can protect the Earth realm. And Tony Stark, after talking to Tony Stark, which they had a really interesting interaction, Tony gives him a ship and a new costume and sends him into space. And things don't go quite like he planned, I guess. But yeah, it was quite interesting. I'm not sure how I feel yet about the fact that Doctor Strange is depowered again. I know we had this story happen, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, whenever they relaunched Doctor Strange. And, you know, it worked really well that time. But it feels like not enough time has gone by to repeat this story cycle. And you know, there's some differences in this story, of course. But, I don't know, it almost feels like maybe too soon. Although, I'm sure a lot of people haven't been picking up Doctor Strange. My assumption, at least, based on the fact that this has been relaunched 3 or 4 times in the same number of years with the same number of creative teams. But I think the direction Mark Waid's got this in could end up being really interesting. Regardless of all that, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this. I thought it was really well done. Really well done. The banter between Strange and Tony was pretty damn funny. I really enjoyed that. I like all the inner monologue of Strange as we're going through the story. That kind of sets things up as we go along. I thought that was well done. Jesus Saiz's art is really fantastic. It's very different from his typical art style. This is more like a rendered or maybe even painted style. And I think it works well for this particular story. It's in particular those first few pages, man. He's fighting this like magical, I don't know what his name is, some demon looking thing, and in another dimension. And as he's defeating him, he like sews up the rift between that dimension and Earth with like this golden rope. And it was just beautiful to see. I absolutely loved it. So I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes, though. I really dug this first issue. I like to see people try new things. Again, I know this is kind of something we've seen, but I don't think that Marvel would let Mark Waid tell the same exact story that Jason Aaron did a few years ago. So I have high hopes that this book will keep engrossing me. And, you know, I've picked up every single Strange book since Jason Aaron took over a few years ago. And I think they've all been fantastic. And that's something to be said about that, because Strange has never been that interesting a character. And we'll see how it goes. So Doctor Strange, number one. I'm going to give this one a 4 out of 5. Really, really liked it. From there, let's do Sword Daughter. This is a new Dark Horse comic by Brian Wood with art by Mark Chatter, colors by Jose Villarubia, whose coloring work I love in everything he does. He's fantastic. And this is, of course, another Viking story. And it seems like Brian Wood really likes these Viking things. He did Northlander. I thought he did another one, Black Road. But this one is a little bit different. You know, in the synopsis that we get for these books, it kind of made it seem like this could end up being some sort of like samurai slant to Viking story. And it's very possible with the way that like the main villain group is introduced. They're called the 40 Swords. And that one page where the guy, the dad in this book, gets told that the people that destroyed his village were the 40 Swords. It just reminded me so much of like the introduction of like an anime villain, right? Where they just like pop in for like a couple of frames as they're talking about him, and then they disappear and we get back to the main story. I thought that was really well done. And basically the premise of this is 10 years ago, this group, the 40 Swords, came to this man's village, killed everybody, including his entire family. The only survivor were apparently him and his daughter. And he and his daughter became estranged. Somehow she was raised by nuns and maybe hasn't led the best life, because, of course, nuns in particular at this time could be, how should we say, I don't want to say violent, that's a bad term, but very, very much about discipline. And she doesn't talk the entire book, which I thought was really interesting, because the few word balloons that she does have don't have words. They have like an image. And obviously her dad knows what she's saying when that happens, but I'm not sure like how she communicates with other people and what she's actually saying. Like, is she speaking in a different language that nobody understands, and that's why we see those word balloons? I'm not sure what the point of that is. But I thought it was really fascinating, because a lot is conveyed in just that one picture. Like, there's one part where she finds her dad and wants to take him to the seashore where like this group of other Vikings are. And basically her word balloon just has like waves. And so, you know, that's where they're going. And they want to find the 40 Swords. So they go to interrogate this guy, Blacktooth. And as they're talking to the guy, she ends up attacking him and killing him. And dad's like, what are you doing? Like, we need information. And her war balloon just has like a picture of a red bird. And her dad knows exactly what that means. So they're going to go find this other guy. I can't remember his name. Something Bird, I think it was. And I thought that was really fascinating. The art is absolutely beautiful. I loved it. It's very scenic, very calm and serene. But also violent when it needs to be. Like the scenes where the girl kills Blacktooth, it was just blew me away. It's just really well done. So Sword Daughter number one, really enjoyed it. I had high hopes for it. I'm glad that it delivered in what I expected. Of course, a lot of this is very much introduction. So I'm sure once the series gets going another issue or two, things will start really heating up and we're going to get a lot more of the battles and struggles between these characters with the 40 Swords. But I highly recommend you pick this up. Sword Daughter number one from Dark Horse Comics is a 5 out of 5 for me. The last one is a little bit of an odd choice. And, you know, like I said, I read a bunch of books this week and I was trying to figure out which ones I wanted to discuss on this podcast. And I immediately jumped to this book because it is by far the most different of any that I read. And that book is Celes number one from Lionforge. This is not part of the Catalyst Prime universe or anything like that. It's self-contained. It's part of the Roar line, which, if I'm not mistaken, the Roar line is the young adult books. And I know some people are going to be like, oh my God, young adult, Martin, we're done listening. Now listen, listen up, because this book is really good. It's written by, or created by Dave Stewart II, written by Dave Scheidt, with art by Joe Flood. And basically this follows a group of people that work in a cell phone shop, like a, I don't know, Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, one of those kind of shops. And they're having a midnight launch for the SanStar 6, which we can assume is kind of like the iPhone would be, right? There's a giant new phone coming out. And there's this whole big group of outside waiting. One of the guys is running late because he's playing video games. One of the girls doesn't want to be there because she's got a test in the morning, so she's got to study. The other guy's like taking a nap in the back. And the boss, the manager of the store, is freaking hilarious. He's like an Instagram model, and everything he says is super positive. And yeah, everything's all about him, of course. And I really dug this. It was like the launch event for this phone, and how the interactions of people are affected by this new phone launch. And of course, you know, stuff like this happens in real life all the time. Maybe not so much now as it used to. I remember when the iPhone first came out, it was just ridiculous, right? Like, even the first couple of models, there were people in line for, like, days and days and days. And, you know, that's mentioned in this book. The funny part was that the midnight launch has to be canceled because these phones have a factory defect. Because they have some kind of, like, water cooling system. And it's got, like, antifreeze, like car antifreeze. And they're leaking from the factory. And there's a bunch of funny scenes based on that as well, where, like, you know, they're going to, like, mutate or whatever because this Luca's flowing out of the phones. I don't know. It was really enjoyable. This is not a typical comic that I normally read, but I'm super glad that I picked this up. I think I might have talked about it on the Comic Predictor segment last week. And the reason I wanted to read it was because the synopsis sounded really interesting. And, you know, I try to read different things all the time. I don't want to be stuck in just a genre, even though, you know, I still love superhero comics and I love horror comics, for example. But I don't want to read just that all the time. It can get kind of boring. You know what I mean? Like, not boring in the sense that I'm bored of what I read because it's not good. Most of what I read I find really good. But I think it's important to try new things. And this is definitely one of those things that is definitely very new to me. Not something I would normally read, but I really, really enjoyed it. The art style is a little cartoony in some ways, but not overly cartoony, and I think it works very well for the story. The characters are all extremely well developed in the short amount of time that this book has, and yeah, well worth picking up. If you have kids, you might want to check this out and give it to them, but even as an adult, I recommend you read this. This is, you know, a lot of the books that I read this week were really heavy. A lot of them were like new number ones or pretty early on in the story. And, you know, you don't want to get bogged up in all that denseness. You know, sometimes you want to read something that's a nice palate cleanser. And Selly's was exactly that. It was really funny, really enjoyable. Highly, highly recommend you pick this up. I'm not sure how many issues this is. I'm pretty sure it's a miniseries. And we'll see how it goes. But I look forward to picking up Selly's number two. And again, this is Selly's from Lion Forge, part of the Roar Comics line. And I'm going to give this one a 5 out of 5, too. It was awesome. I loved it. I love picking up quirky stuff, in particular when it's so unexpected. I end up enjoying it even more. And I think that's going to be it for this episode of Top of the Pile. Thank you all for listening. I will be back tomorrow with the news and, of course, the Comic Predictor. There's some really interesting bits of news that I want to talk about, so that should make for an interesting discussion. Wednesday, I haven't decided what kind of episode I'm going to do yet. Probably a rant, but I don't know yet. Thursday, I'm going to have a great guest. Bridget Connell is going to be on the show. She is the writer and artist for Brother Nash from Titan Comics. I talked about Brother Nash on the Comic Predictor segment last week. I really enjoyed it. I reached out to her, and we're going to be chatting, in fact, tomorrow night to get ready for that episode. So look out for that on Thursday. Friday, I'll premiere the top five. Thank you for listening. You can find me, by the way, on Twitter. If you don't know that by now, @GeekVine is the best place. There is an email address, and I've been saying it's comictalktoday@gmail.com, But I thought about it long and hard, and I was like, I don't have a Twitter account for this podcast. It's just me. Why am I even bothering with an email for the show? So, if you want to get in touch with me via email, the best place will be nerdylegion@gmail.com. That's the general network email address. That's the one that I check most often, so we'll just go with that for now on. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you tomorrow.